Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening, everyone. This is Revolution Radio, and good evening, JBJD.
Hey, Dr. Kate.
How are you? Long time no hear.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't have the exuberant energy I usually bring to your show because I was bailing out from the flooding today.
Oh, you had flooding up there.
Oh,
tell me.
Please. No, it's too boring.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a hydrologist, so that would have been a
I'm so sorry. Of course it's not boring to you.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Sure boring to our guests. But anyway, let me just do just a quick introduction to our show this evening. I am very pleased to have JBJD with us this evening. And if you are here to listen to a show about eligibility, show tonight we're talking about election fraud, which is absolutely live and relevant now, today, and relevant to our future efforts to make sure this never happens again and that every state, every official checks into the credentials of a presidential candidate. So I want to say just briefly, eligibility will be discussed next week with Mario Puzo, so please join us. But tonight, I'm very pleased to have JBJD here because she's the one who spotted, you know, really, if you look at the issue, going after eligibility is quite what I would call glamorous. And we've had a lot of people buy into you know, false theories and so forth, or incomplete theories, let's put it that way. But everyone has forgotten that the initial issue that probably could have been addressed even before Obama got on the ballot was this election fraud. And so I was pleased to host JBJD a couple of times in October. I think those shows are still archived here, so you're welcome to listen to that. At that time, she was really more than in the thick of things. She had figured everything out, trudging along, you know, doing this, and had figured out a way to do things. And just recently, she's come up with some great stuff. I just put her article in the chat room. So this evening, I'm delighted to ask her to come and just update us on what the state actions are, new information she's found out. And without any further ado, I just want to welcome you again, JBJD. Go for it.
Wow. I just listened to part three of our conversation, and it flies by. It was an hour and a half, and before I knew it, it was time to call in for tonight's show. But I wanted to see where I had left off.
Terrific. Thank you for doing that.
Well, I'm a good guest. I want to be called back. All right, so here's where we are. The identity of what went wrong in the 2008 election came in the summer of 2008 when I realized that whether a man is eligible, the only way to keep him out of the White House is by keeping him off the ballot, because there is no provision of any state or federal law, including the U.S. Constitution, that requires anybody to vet the president. The electors elect him. There's no requirement that they vet as to constitutional eligibility. Congress certifies the vote of the electors. There's no constitutional requirement that Congress vet the president-elect. And the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court swears in the president. So I knew in the summer of 2008 the only way to keep this man off the ballot, the only way to keep him out of the White House is to keep him off the ballot. What could be a justification for keeping the man off the ballot? Well, I had begun to look at laws in some states, and I realized that some states require that the candidate whose name the state prints on the ballot must be eligible for the job. Not all states have those laws. So I looked at those states that had those ballot eligibility laws, and I looked to see whether you could contest the name of the candidate on the ballot. And in those states where you could do that, I advised people, keep his name off the ballot. But this was just before the convention. I didn't have a blog. At any rate, his name got on the ballot in all 50 states. Now, again, you don't elect the president in November. You elect the electors for the president. So it really didn't matter if his name wasn't on the ballot. The electors still could have elected him. However, they wouldn't dare if he didn't get his name on the ballot. And that's pivotal to remember, that the electors can elect anybody they want, but they wouldn't dare elect somebody whose name wasn't on the ballot, because people believe they're electing the president in November. Do you see? Okay, so I had drafted, and I mentioned this on the last show, I had drafted complaints of election fraud in those states that required to get the candidate's name on the ballot, you have to be eligible for the job. And I accumulated all of the evidence of ineligibility. Now, you pointed out to your listeners, we are not discussing Article 2, Section 1 eligibility. I couldn't care less whether he's eligible. That's outside of the scope of this. I believe he's not, but he could be. Who knows? But what I do know is that the people who certified he was eligible, if I can't find in the public record evidence of eligibility, if thousands, perhaps millions of people out there can't find in the public record evidence of eligibility, how the hell did Nancy Pelosi, who signed the certifications of nomination that she submitted to election officials in those states with laws that said you have to be eligible to get on the ballot, how the hell did she determine that somebody was eligible? I know what was in the public record in June of 2008. What was in the public record in June of 2008 was a computer image put there by a man who said, I know you have questions about my eligibility. The footer in that image was paid for by Barack Obama. He was the candidate in the primary. He bought that website. He paid for that website, and he said, I am a native. I'm eligible. Well, I happened to see the December 2007 application he submitted in Arizona for the presidential preference primary, in which he signed a form that said, I am a natural-born citizen, I'm 35 years of age, I've lived in the country 14 years. So I knew he knew the difference between the constitutional requirement of natural-born and this thing that says native. I said in June of 2008, he's not eligible, or at least there's no evidence in the public record to say that he is. And this is the best evidence they have, a computer image. And people said, that's impossible. I said, no, that's exactly what they're going to do here. In August, he was made the nominee for the Democratic Party, as I've been calling them, the Democratic Corporation, and the certifications went out to the states. Now, just as an aside, please don't get hung up on the certifications. The language varies depending on the state election laws. So in Hawaii, there's a law that says you have to explicitly write on the certification that the presidential nominee satisfies the constitutional requirements for the job. It doesn't matter whether you put that line in. You're still certifying he's constitutionally eligible because when you sign the certification, you wrote he's been duly nominated by the DNC. And what do the DNC rules say to nominate a presidential candidate? That he must be constitutionally eligible for the job. So it's a distinction without a difference. It doesn't matter what the wording is. In fact, in South Carolina, as I've mentioned, the certification didn't say, in South Carolina, unlike most other states, you have to have the party submit your name to be in the presidential preference primary. Most states, the candidate can just fill an application like Mr. Obama did in Arizona. But in South Carolina, in Texas, and I'm sure there are other states, to get into the primary, you go through the party. South Carolina law says, similar to Hawaii law, you have to write down explicitly these candidates that are eligible for the job. And as I mentioned, Carol Fowler, the chair of the South Carolina State Party, when she listed Mr. Obama's name as one of the candidates for the presidential preference primary, she typed a memo, handed it over to the then state treasurer, Kathy Hensley, who walked it over to the Board of Elections. Here are our candidates for the primary, and the Board of Elections wouldn't take it. They said, no, there's no wording here that says the candidates are eligible. And here's Kathy Hensley, handwriting, scribbling out, oh, everybody's eligible or will be eligible by the time of the election, to mimic the wording in the state law. Now, how the hell did she decide on the spot that these people are all eligible? Well, this is the kind of thing that went on. I said in August, how could they know that he's eligible when the only thing out there is an online computer image by a man who bought the website, who got his former employer to verify it's true? And he's only a native anyway. People thought I was crazy. Now you get to January 2009, and this was a discussion you and I had in the third appearance, and I wrote an article after that that blew this wide open. You and I discussed in January of 2009, I said, Bob Bauer, who's now the White House counsel, who wrote a book on election law, he was representing Barack Obama, defendant, in the Hollister case brought by Phil Berg. There have been several single quote eligibility cases going through the state and federal courts. In my opinion, none of them had a valid cause of action. I thought each of them was infirm. Now, Bob Bauer represented Barack Obama, defendant. He also, Bob Bauer, represented Organizing for America, which was the presidential campaign of Barack Obama, which took over the Fight the Smears website. We have this on the blog. The footnotes kept changing depending on who was taking over the website, but the information remained the same. So Bob Bauer represented Organizing for America, and he was the general counsel to the DNC, which meant he's also representing Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. So in the Hollister case, another eligibility case, I guess Bob Bauer, and I don't mean to mind read, but it seemed to me as if he was so frustrated by all of these eligibility cases, and he'd gotten them all dismissed, but this one he thought, you know what, I'm not only going to get this dismissed, I'm going to somehow stop all of these eligibility cases. And in an act that I can only describe as hubris, in his motion to dismiss in the Hollister case, he added that infamous footnote, that fabulous, extraordinary, wonderful footnote. And this is why, even though I think all these cases were bogus, and with all due respect, the lawyers have just tainted the eligibility issue, but I really love that Phil Berg brought this horrible case, because this is what came out of it. Bob Bauer wrote in that footnote, by the way, Your Honor, can you just take judicial notice of the fact that my client has publicly produced a birth certificate, and could you just take judicial notice that fact check said they saw the original document, and it's real. Now, that language might sound like it means something. It means absolutely nothing. What does publicly produced mean? Well, the only thing Obama publicly produced was that computer image on his Fight the Smear site. And, of course, the court doesn't know anything unless the parties tell it. So if Bob Bauer, or when Bob Bauer didn't disclose, and that public production consisted of an online image, the judge doesn't know that. When Bob Bauer doesn't say, and by the way, Your Honor, the whole name of Fact Check is Annenberg Political Fact Check, and my client used to work for them, the court doesn't know that. The court did not take judicial notice of those facts. Now, what I wrote about after that was, why is that significant that Bob Bauer did that? And you and I had discussed some of this, but not all of it. And what you and I had discussed was, if you want to eliminate all of these eligibility lawsuits, what would be the one piece of evidence that you could introduce into the federal court to take judicial notice of that would probably end all discussion about eligibility? And that would be the certificate and the certification of nomination, official DNC certification of nomination, signed by the chair of the 2008 DNC convention, Nancy Pelosi, who just so happens to also be the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, third in line of presidential succession, who got all these states, based on her word, to print the name of this candidate on the state election ballots. What has more gravitas than that certification? And it says explicitly, the one in Hawaii, use that one, it says he's constitutionally eligible for the job, which means he's a natural born citizen. Why would you ask the court to take judicial notice of your client's word? You see? So that right away prove to me. I told you the best evidence they have is that stupid image. And it means absolutely nothing. But then I thought, wait a second. Why did Bob Bauer ask the court to take judicial notice of facts which still didn't mean that the man is eligible? I figured, well, he's going to finesse those facts, right? If he gets judicial notice, he will now announce to the world, or the DNC, or somebody will announce to the world, you see, a federal court ruled that he's eligible. Now, I couldn't possibly explain to everybody that judicial notice of the fact that somebody introduced something doesn't mean he's a citizen, even. But that's finessing legal points. I knew that Bob Bauer would take advantage of judicial notice of words to tell everybody his client was a natural-born citizen. But what really got to me was, if Bob Bauer is willing to risk his license to practice by trying to bamboozle the court in this way, and at best, that what he's asking the court to take judicial notice of is only that his client said, I'm a native. Why wouldn't he be willing to risk his license on Nancy Pelosi's certification? I mean, that has real gravitas. And if he introduced that and the court took judicial notice of that, that would be a done deal, all right? So why would Bob Bauer be willing to jeopardize his license to bamboozle the court on the one hand, but not on the other? And it hit me. Bob Bauer, remember, is the lawyer for the DNC, for Nancy Pelosi, for Harry Reid, for Barack Obama. He cannot exonerate his client Barack Obama in a civil suit in federal court by exposing his client Nancy Pelosi to criminal liability by introducing a bogus certification. Did you get that?
Yeah. Yes, there's a little delay. I'm muting so I can hear you, but that still blows me away. I remember when we talked about that on the show. It just absolutely blows me away because
when you asked me that question, why didn't he introduce the certification, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking that question. And why he didn't introduce the certification, I said because it wasn't real. But neither was the statement that Obama publicly referred to. So why would he be willing to use that statement and the statement that could judicial notice the fact check said it's for real? Well, all that means there must have been an actual document that somebody made up and fact check saw it was an actual document that had been scanned onto the computer. That doesn't mean anything, do you see? It still didn't answer for me why was he willing to fudge the Kolb and fact check, but he's not willing to fudge this. That would incur criminal liability. Get Obama off in a civil suit by exposing his other client to criminal liability. So he couldn't fudge that, do you see? But
yes.
Obviously, if it was real, he would use it. Here's another thing that always bugs me, and I just want to get this in here. What do you think at that very...
There you are.
Sorry, I got disconnected. Sorry.
Yeah, you were breaking up a little bit before. So probably about, I would say, 30 seconds, if you could just rewind yourself.
Yes. When Bob Bauer introduced those documents to ask the federal court, Judge Robertson, and I say his name whenever I can in case somebody who knows him is listening, but what do you think would have happened if Phil Berg had said, Your Honor, I have no objection to your taking judicial notice. Could you just ask him to introduce the documents? You see what I mean? What would have happened if that happened? You want to know something else? What would have happened if Phil Berg said, You know what, Your Honor? I have no objection to your taking judicial notice of those statements. I want to introduce, can you just take judicial notice that Nancy Pelosi signed a certification of this certification of nomination that went to the state election officials in whatever 40 states? I say 40 because she's not the one who submitted them in every state. So
that would have been a brilliant strategy.
Wouldn't that have been brilliant? It would have been
yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. Anyway, keep going, please.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Well, I don't know when to stop because this story is so fascinating to me, and it all happened since you and I wrote the post after you and I talked. Anyway, so this all happened, okay? So now I know for absolute stuff. I know that there's an overwhelmingly strong circumstantial case of election fraud. So, you know, I drafted the citizens' complaints of election fraud to their state attorneys general and request for investigation, and I included all of this evidence that I'd accumulated, that the person who certified Mr. Obama's eligibility in the state could not have ascertained beforehand that Mr. Obama was eligible based on documents in the public record because, and then I would list, so because Mr. Obama said he was only a native citizen and not natural born, because Bob Bauer said, whatever. So I listed all that, and it was very clear and very plain, and I said on the citizen's complaints in bold, this complaint takes no position on whether Mr. Obama is a natural-born citizen. Okay. We're talking election fraud. We're talking people swearing that he's eligible based on what? We don't know. Okay. So, and we had asked, and we've mentioned this before in prior shows, we asked members of the party, depending on who submitted the documents and which eligible state, on what basis what documentary basis did you determine this eligibility? And we couldn't get an answer. Okay. And there wasn't much you could do about that except in the state of Texas. And in Texas, I mentioned they have these laws. I hadn't exercised the laws yet, but I knew they had them, where in some instances, the chair of the Texas state political party can be treated as a public official. For example, when you want to access or to obtain government documents, citizens use their state public records law or in some instances the federal public records law, and they request the documents from their state officials. In most circumstances, you can't do that to a state party official, right? That's not a public actor in most states. But in Texas, God bless Texas, they have laws that say in some instances the chair of the political party is treated in the same way as the state official. So if you want documents, if those documents are required to be kept under state law, then you as a citizen have the right to obtain those documents under the Texas Open Records Law. Well, that was like manna from heaven for me. This is the solution then. We know there are no documents. We can't get the Attorney General, let's talk about Texas, we can't get the Attorney General in Texas to do anything about the citizen complaints. So let's go one step further. We've already said to the Attorney General in the complaint that we've asked Boyd Ritchie to produce the documents. We had done that in every state before the complaint was filed. We asked whoever was the person filing in that state, we asked for the documents. We hadn't exercised rights under the Texas Open Records Law to get those documents, though. So I thought, okay, let's do that now. But before I did that, I thought, you know what? I am in New England. There has to be a group. Texas is huge. There has to be a group in Texas that deals with these open records things, public records issues. And so I go on the internet and I find this group. This is a hoot. This is such a hoot. It's called the FOIFT, the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. Okay? Very official sounding name, Freedom of Information Foundation. All right, not a fly-by-night organization, a foundation. And their board of directors, oh my goodness, senior members of press and political people, it's really impressive. I was impressed. I was so impressed that I thought, let me recruit this organization to help my Texans. And then I can announce to my Texans, I found help for you locally here. So I posted a comment on their website. And I explained that in Texas, you might be able to compel people to do what they should do, some generic sounding, really nice comment. You know, I write nice comments. Anyway, the comment went into moderation, and I thought, well, that's fine. I'm a new contributor to the site, and so I go into moderation. Luckily, I sent the comment and the link via email to somebody else, because lo and behold, when I checked in the morning, the comment was gone. And the comment I suppose I shouldn't have left this out. The comment did mention something about Boyd Ritchie and the Texas Democratic Party, and that telling people we're not going to give you information might work in other states, but not in Texas. Now, I had looked at this Freedom of Information Foundation website, and they announced they were having a big seminar to tell people how to file requests under the Open Records Law in Texas. And it said you might, not you will, but you might even be able to ask an attorney there some questions. And for that, might be able to ask an attorney, and for going to the seminar to figure out how to write a letter, which, by the way, is posted on the Attorney General website. They charged only $50 a head. And I thought, damn, if I could get $50 a head for answering questions and telling people how to write a letter, I could do this full time. But anyway, so I thought they would be receptive, right? But in the morning, my comment is gone. So, of course, I called the FOIFT and spoke to their head of education. I could get her exact title, but it's on the website. But anyway, I explained to her what happened. Now, she's reading my comment back to me while we're on the phone, so she has it. You just can't see it on the screen. So I explained to her how serious this work is and whatever. And part of the Texas Open Records Law says, and part of the video that their executive director on the FOIFT says on the website is, when you request information, nobody has the right to ask you what you're going to do with it. Why do you want it? In fact, that's explicitly prohibited by law. So as I'm talking to the director of education and explaining about the citizen complaints and we're trying to obtain information, she says to me, are you saying that Barack Obama is not a natural-born citizen? And I thought to myself, if you wanted to chill an inquiry into this, I certainly have your attitude that that's what you're intending me to do, to stop looking at this. But, of course, it's me, so you're not intimidating me, but I didn't say that. But I thought, this is normally illegal, but if I were somebody else, you might have chilled my inquiry, which is the antithesis of what the law is about. And here you are soliciting donations, and you have this stellar board, and you're doing the same thing. Now, it just so happens, yes, the woman was a Democrat. Of course, I looked it up afterwards. Yes, you've contributed only to Democratic candidates, but that's not the issue. So at any rate, I said to her, could you please ask your executive director to contact me, because all of these citizens in Texas, there are over 100 people have filed these complaints. They're very frustrated. They understand how their government works, and they just want to make it work better. So, of course, she never got back to me. He never got back to me. I was left with no other choice but to write this all up and post it, which I did, including pictures of the board of directors. I didn't put their contact information, but I had hoped that people would look it up. But maybe that's something I'll do. But at any rate, so we couldn't get any help from the foundation that advertises itself as the helpers. So I did it on my own. I typed up the letter under the open records law, made it official. Boy, Richie, we want the damn documents under this law. And he had so much time under the law to respond. Well, needless to say, he didn't respond. And I need to make this clear. I don't care about the documents. I don't want the documents. There aren't any documents. I want Attorney General Abbott to investigate citizen complaints of election fraud. That's what I want. And why do I want that? Because Congress won't do anything until somebody says the emperor has no clothes. And the quickest and simplest way to get that point across is to exercise existing laws with existing officials. Okay? If you can't get your existing officials to enforce existing laws that you, the citizen, have enacted, what the hell difference is it going to make to enact new laws and elect new officials? So.
Unbelievable. Let me just interject just a second here, because I think this is significant that you made it clear you weren't, you know, this was not an investigation of eligibility and you didn't want those documents, yet this person made it about that. And, you know, sort of out of the blue. And the way you responded was very good, because it didn't allow her to, or allow this person to cut you off. But just for the listeners, this is how deep this has been, and how serious the claim that you know, the JBJD has uncovered. So please keep going, because this is just an astounding discovery of fraud and incompetence. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Yes, it's on so many levels, this is so bad. But let me just clarify something. When we request the documents through the open records law, absolutely we want Boyd Ritchie to produce the documents. I'm saying, for the purpose of establishing election fraud, the only reason that we have to go the extra step to use the open records law instead of just asking, which we had done, which I documented in the complaint, is to convince AG Abbott, do you get this? We're doing your job for you. We've now outlined the fraud. We've done the investigation. We've provided the documents, the Arizona certification versus the online, versus the statement in Fight the Smears. The pleading submitted, God bless, in a court of law by Bob Bauer versus Nancy Pelosi certification. We've now laid out the whole chronology for you. We cited the Texas law. We gave you Boyd Ritchie certification. We've given you everything you need to make a case. But we don't even want you to make the case. We just want you to ask the question. Ask Boyd Ritchie, to give you the documents that were the basis for his certification that Barack Obama is constitutionally qualified to get onto the Texas ballot. That's it. Just ask him for the documents. Now, we asked him for the documents with the open records law letter. And he said, his office said, I'm not going to give them to you. Actually, the deadline passed, and people then called the office and spoke to his assistant, who said, we're not going to give them to you. Our lawyers said we don't have to. Well, under the Texas open records law, if you believe that you are not subject to producing the documents, then you must, under the law, ask the Attorney General for an advisory opinion or explain why you think you're not covered by this law with a copy to the requester of the records. Then the requester of the records gets time to refute your reasons for not wanting to disclose the documents. None of this was done. Okay? But remember, I didn't expect documents because there aren't any. The guy's not, you can't establish in the record, in the public record, that the guy's eligible. These people who've spent 2 years looking for documents, well, where's your common sense? If you can't find them, how did Boyd Ritchie find them? If you can't get documents from the Hawaii Department of Health, then how did Nancy Pelosi get them? She didn't. He couldn't. You see, the people, it was like chickens with their heads cut off, and I couldn't stop them. At any rate, so when Boyd Ritchie's office said, we're not, our lawyers said we don't have, I thought, I love this answer. So you've checked with your lawyers, have you? So everybody knows what everybody knows what's happening here. Now, under the Texas Open Records Law, citizens can enforce that law, okay? They can go into court and demand the documents, or ask the court to demand the documents, or they can file a complaint with the Attorney General. That is much too attenuated for this purpose. The purpose wasn't to obtain the documents because, chorus, there are no documents. The purpose was to show that Boyd Ritchie, who swore somebody's eligible, won't tell you on what documentary basis he ascertained that eligibility before swearing. That's the fraud. So, somebody on the internet contacted me and said, you should present this whole thing in a visual. And I said, great. You know, everyone has great ideas. I'm swamped between my real life and this, which is, you know, this could be all-consuming, believe me. And I wish it could be, actually. I couldn't construct a visual representation of all of this stuff. So she sends me Erica Thunderpaws, and this is the only collaboration we will ever have. She sent me this thing and said, can I post it? And I'm, you know me, Dr. K. I'm like, no, you can't post that. Let's work on it. And 2+ days and more than 20 hours later, and I mean literally, it was at least 10 hours a day of back and forth, we had managed to put on this visual representation the whole roadmap to fraud in Texas. Citizens make a law that says that you have to be eligible and you have to produce evidence. I mean, you have to be eligible in the ballot. And so Boyd Ritchie produces a document that says Barack Obama is eligible. He gives it to the Secretary of State. She puts the name on the ballot. The citizens say to the Secretary of State, can you please provide us with all of the documentation you received from the party to establish this man is eligible? All they sent was the certification and the cover letter. The citizens then go directly to Boyd Ritchie and say, could you please provide us with the documentation? And he ignores the people. The people then use the open records law, and they ask again, Boyd Ritchie, we want the documents under the open records law, and he still says we don't have to. Now the citizens file a complaint of election fraud with Attorney General Abbott. It's all there. Plus, we explain that the Texas Democratic Party is not even incorporated. It's a club. It's like the Kiwanis Club. So based on the word of the head of the Kiwanis Club, you could think of it, that this guy's eligible to be president, the guy got onto a ballot that says only eligible people can be on. And this is what happened in Texas. And we couldn't get anybody to do anything about it. Well, you know, it's a sensitive issue, and why would an attorney general risk his career on the backs of, say, 100 complaints? But what if he had 10,000 complaints? Better yet, what if he had 10,000 people standing on the steps of City Hall in Austin? The same people who somehow had the resources to go to Washington in March, what if they marched in Austin? What if they said, you're our chief law enforcement official in this state?
So what you're saying is people actually did, you didn't, there were not enough people, there were only about 100 people who filed complaints, or?
Unless they copied, some people have said that they downloaded a complaint and copied it. So that could be the case.
But after
the size of Texas,
after this very detailed, meticulous sort of roadmap to election fraud, nobody has done anything after that, even as it's been clear?
Just filing more complaints.
So really, something big has to happen there. Because you've got a clear path.
Yes, but wait,
a well-documented path. Oh, sorry. I'm very excited about your work, as you know, so I keep interrupting.
Well, the work is beyond reproach.
Correct.
But wait, it gets better. Okay, so then this whole health care thing, or as I call it, the mandatory purchase of private health insurance bill, comes up, and it gets signed into law. And I was asked, actually, on a website, a couple of websites, they asked me questions, and I had to go searching, you know, well, maybe JBJD is around or whatever. And this one website said, what do you think is going to happen if this bill passes? And I said, oh, if it passes in anywhere near the form it's in now, I anticipate that attorneys general in the states already have drafted their pleadings to rush into court and stop it. It's unconstitutional. And that's exactly what happened, okay? And one of those state AGs that filed suit was AG Abbott in Texas. I thought, oh, damn, why the hell, excuse me, are you going through all of this whatever, public, oh, I'm so whatever, and I'm going to file suit and tie up the resources and on something that could take forever, and it's a constitutional issue, and on and on and on. Why would you do that when all you have to do is ask one question of Boyd Ritchie, who's the chair of the Democratic Texas Democratic Party, he happens to be an attorney as well. All you have to do is ask him to produce these documents. That would be the end of the health insurance bill. It would be the end of everything. Because there's no way in hell if one state, especially Texas, gets the person who certified Mr. Obama's eligibility to say, I have no documentary basis, then Congress can no longer avoid introducing articles of impeachment and investigating who the hell is in the White House. What is the legal status of this man in the White House? And that's a week. How long does it take to write a letter? I wrote the letter virtually. I wrote an open letter to the Attorney General, and I wrote the letter, and all you have to do is download it and change a few words and put a stamp on it, and that's 50 cents, and hello. So in 24 hours, you can give them a time certain. Say I want the documents within some. Give them the 10 days, the 10 business days that are allotted in a normal civilian request for documents under the open records law. Give him the same time we gave him. And you're not going to get an answer. And then you can say to the press, I requested these documents and I couldn't get them. How the hell are people going to still ignore the issue? They can't. At any rate, that's all I asked in the open letter. all right? I said, why are you wasting taxpayer dollars to pursue this pie in the sky instead of asking for documents to preserve the integrity of the ballot? I don't know why. But anyway, now, Kate, can I get a time check? Because I have so many things here. How much time do I have?
Sorry, hang on. There's just a delay when I'm unmuting myself. My apologies. 39 minutes.
Okay, then I have to. Okay, I have to tell you about this thing.
And also, just again, I want to advise you that if we run out of time, I will invite you back again, and we can pick up where we left off. So again, please go ahead.
All right. And nobody has any questions, Kate? Oh, I'm sorry.
No. So wait a minute. Wait. Nothing yet, and the chat is very quiet, but I'm keeping an eye on everything. So people are listening to you, so just please go ahead.
Are you sure there are people on the other side?
You know, there are 19 users in the chat, and, you know, that doesn't always show all the people who actually are listening. I'll get those stats after the show for you.
Okay.
But right now, it's we're all on the edge of our chair, and I'm trying to actually judge you up, so you keep going. So
okay.
Go ahead, please.
All right, and I think I'm going in chronological order for okay, now here's the latest thing. So no response from A.G. Abbott. And I don't really know what people in Texas are doing to try to effect that response. I know that people have sent the roadmap of fraud to people. It's gorgeous. Have you seen it? Well, I can't ask you because you're on mute. But anyway, so let me get you up to current now. Well, so I've tried to get help for the people in Texas. I've tried to get other people involved in this to realize that the election fraud vis-a-vis the ballot is the whole issue. I've tried to persuade people that you can't understand or grasp this immediately, that you actually have to read, and everything you need is on the blog. It might not be it might not be accessible in the way that I would prefer. But it's accessible, and if you have questions, just come ask me. You see some of my responses are longer than the posts. So all the information is on the blog, and it will take you time, and you might need to read it 2-3 times, but you'll get it eventually, and I'll help you if you need the help. But then I thought, wait a minute, why are we, meaning the citizens, disorganized and independent, why are we fighting this battle alone? We can't get our elected officials to fight it. What about the parties? What about the Republicans? I thought, why aren't the Republicans doing something about this? We have submitted copies of the documents to the Republican Party of Texas, the RPT, to the RNC. Why aren't the Republicans doing anything about this? And then something happened, and I took another one of my hissy fits, and I posted in the middle of my ire, and I should never do that because I wasn't that clear. But here's what happened. In the fall of 2008, Orly Tates and Gary Creep filed a case, Keyes v. Bowen. And in that case, they mentioned another case that was out of Texas. Now, I'm going to say something because it's important to the story. It might be confusing, but do your best. If somebody brings a case in state court that rests on a cause of action that arises under state law, then the decision in that case is precedence only in that state. It's a state law decided by a state court. It's used in that state. Okay. If a person brings a cause of action in a state court that includes both a state law and a federal law, that person can bring it in state court, but the defendant in that case can say, you know what, I think I'd have better luck going into a federal court, and can remove that case into a federal court in the same jurisdiction. When that federal court hears a case that's based on state law and federal law, the federal part of it can be used in other federal jurisdictions. But the state part of it is only good in that state, because the federal court will actually consider state law, state cases, to decide the state law issue. Okay? So Orley and Gary Creep used as one of their cases in Keyes v. Bowen this case out of Texas called Texas Democratic Party, or TDP, versus Republican Party of Texas, or RPT. And how did I find out they used this case? Because one of my readers sent me this case and said, oh, this is an interesting case for this reason. Why don't you look at it? Well, I always look at what my readers send. I just don't always look at it right away. And I didn't look at this case right away, because what interested the reader wasn't what interested me for the purpose of the work I was doing. So when I had time, I read the case and I thought, oh my God, look at this case. It's not important for the reason he thinks. It's important for a whole other reason. And I looked up the site for the case to see if it had ever been used. And that's what led me to the Keyes v. Bowen case. The Keyes v. Bowen case was brought in California. And attorneys Tates and Creep tried to use the case out of federal court in Texas in the state court in California. They couldn't do it because the state issue that was decided in the Texas federal court dealt with Texas state law. So you couldn't port that case, even though it was decided in the federal court, into California. It had no precedential value. Now, I don't know why they didn't know that. It's stupid. They're talking about a Texas state law. You can't use that in California. And then they just forgot. They lost the case and they forgot about it. That case, TDP versus RPT, stands for the following proposition. In 2006, 2 years before Obama, Tom DeLay won the Republican primary for Congress in March of 2006. Shortly thereafter, one of his senior staffers took a plea bargain in a criminal corruption case and gave up his boss. So shortly after winning the Republican primary, Congressman DeLay announced publicly, I'm not going to run for re-election. Now, when he won the primary, I'm going to forget the woman's name, Hensicker? I'll look it up. Anyway, the chair of the Republican Party of Texas had submitted his name to the Secretary of State to go on the ballot. Now he announces he's not going to run. In May of that year, so it's March, in May, Tom DeLay, who's now living in Virginia, sends to the chair of the RPT his Virginia driver's license, his voter registration, his tax, whatever, all of which indicate he's a legal resident of Virginia. Now, under the Constitution, to be a representative, you have to live in the state on the day of the election, meaning in November. The chair of the RPT determines, and this is under Texas law, she can do this. If the chair of the party determines that a candidate is no longer eligible, she must declare that he's ineligible. So she gets these documents from Tom DeLay, and she declares he's ineligible because he's not going to be living in the state in November. And she notifies the Secretary of State, take his name off the ballot, which means they'll put someone else on the ballot. Okay. Now, you can imagine, everyone in the world knows that Tom DeLay is not going to run for re-election. Presumably, his name's on the ballot already because he just won the primary. And why wouldn't the Democrats want to leave his name there? Obviously, nobody's going to vote for a guy who's not running, right? So what does the Democratic Party of Texas do? They file a lawsuit against the RPT, and they say, under state law and federal law, you can't determine that Tom DeLay is ineligible. Because this is May. You don't know where he's going to live in November. So, obviously, the Democratic Party of Texas knows how to use those state laws in Texas to challenge the party chair for declaring a candidate is ineligible. So, the Texas Democratic Party file in state court. The RPT removed from state court and taken it to federal court. So now the federal court is going to decide two issues. One, did the chair of the RPT violate the Texas state law in declaring Mr. DeLay ineligible? And two, did she violate the Constitution? Article 1 is the Congress or the courts? Article 1. So, the lower court, the federal court, decides she violated both laws, state and federal, and orders the Secretary of State to leave Tom DeLay's name on the ballot. And the Republican Party appeals. And they go to the appellate court, and the appellate court agrees with the lower district court. Absolutely, you don't know where Tom DeLay is going to live November 1st, and the Constitution doesn't allow you to make a pre-election determination of ineligibility based on residence. Okay, so the Democratic Party won, and the Secretary of State had to leave Tom DeLay's name on the ballot. I read that case, and I thought, well, I can't swear, but I swore. I was so angry, because that case means, let me say something else about the case. The case said not only, you're going to love this, not only did the TDP, the Texas Democratic Party, have standing to bring this case, but any candidate running for the D's had standing to bring this case. Because having to mount a new campaign against a new opponent would incur actual damages. You would be in a position where you'd been harmed by this decision. And it's redressable because a restraining order prevents the Secretary of State from changing the name. So all the elements of standing were satisfied by either the party or a candidate, because the way the court looked at it, both the party and the candidate, after the primary, have the same interest. They both want to see the candidate elected. So either one of them could have gone to court and had standing. Which means any candidate in Texas who wants to run in the presidential preference primary in 2012 has standing to bring the damn case to ask for a restraining order to keep Obama's name off the ballot. Why the hell aren't the Republicans doing anything about this eligibility issue, this ballot fraud issue? And not only that, but under Texas law, when the record establishes that somebody is not eligible, the party chair must declare the candidate ineligible. Not may, or has the option or the discretion, but must declare. Now, let's just say that I can draft the document that puts together all the evidence that makes it almost certain, virtually certain, that a judge could be persuaded that the record establishes somebody's ineligibility in Texas. Let's say in Texas, the law says if a party chair is asked to produce documents and refuses, that tends to establish fraud or whatever the legal standards are in Texas. Okay, so let's say that you can draft a document that says unequivocally, or that would persuade a judge to rule that this, you're right, the record shows that this candidate is ineligible. Now, according to Texas law, that means that the chair then must declare the candidate ineligible. What if Boyd Ritchie, for example, refuses to declare Barack Obama is ineligible? Well, guess what? There's that old mandamus. There's that old mandamus. Mandamus is the cause of action that was used in a lot of these eligibility cases. It was used improperly. Mandamus affects the separation of governmental powers. Nobody likes to violate the separation of powers. Excuse me. I retract that. Nobody who respects the Constitution likes to violate the governmental separation of powers. The judicial branch does not like to order the executive branch, which would be a Secretary of State or something like that, to do something unless the legislature has explicitly written a law that says this is what you have to do. So when people go into court and say to the court, Your Honor, could you please order the Secretary of State to vet the candidate? The judicial branch is not going to overstep its bounds into the executive branch unless the legislative branch explicitly wrote, your ministerial duty as Secretary of State is to vet the candidate for constitutional eligibility. And that's not in any law. There's no provision that requires vetting. So no court of law was going to grant mandamus. However, we just said there's a law in Texas that says when the record I forget what the wording is. It's on my website. When the record shows that the candidate is ineligible, the chair must, not may, must declare he's ineligible. And if Boyd Ritchie, faced with a court that has ruled on that issue that, yes, the record is clear, and the guy said he was a native, his own lawyer won't introduce evidence that says, oh, you know, if you can persuade the court to say that the record is clear, that the candidate is ineligible, according to this record, according to Texas law, the fact that the chair wouldn't produce evidence of eligibility in Texas, you know, goes to the fact that he's not eligible. If all that is established by the judge and Boyd Ritchie still refuses to declare, then you say to the judge, mandamus. He must be ordered to declare that this person is ineligible, so the Secretary of State can take the name off the ballot. And in Texas, mandamus applies to political party chairs, just like government officials. It's a unique state. Isn't that fabulous?
Yes, it is. And I want to just pull you back just a little bit here, because some other threads are coming through my mind here. I think I understand why why Tates and Crete did, well, not why, but basically how they misused it. But also, wasn't there a case in California regarding Eldridge Cleaver eligibility, and he was kicked off the ballot? Isn't that something that they could have used as well?
Yeah, let me go back to something. Tates and Crete wanted to use the case in California for something. When it didn't work there, they needed to use it in Texas. They knew about this case. Why the hell didn't they use it?
But didn't they file a case in Texas?
If they did, they didn't file this case. And I have to tell you, and this is just, you know, get it off my chest, I get so frustrated because I produce all this great work, but I'm not in front of a camera, and I'm not whatever, whatever. And people are giving all this money to these people. It's a cottage industry now. And so then I tell you, but wait a minute, this case, they've had it over a year. They had it before the inauguration. And you're still paying these people to do what? That's what this case stands for. It shows you how to get standing. It shows you how to, I mean, it's everything. Plus, what I already knew about the Texas law was the mandamus. That if he won't declare that Obama's eligible, you can order him to as long as the record establishes for the court the ineligibility. And what was the other case you asked me about?
Oh, the Eldridge Cleaver case where he tried to run.
Let me say, here's the other thing that really bothers me. If the law says you must do this, then you must do this. If the law doesn't say you have to do it, then you don't have to do it. If the law doesn't say you have to vet the candidate, you don't have to. Somebody says, well, wait a minute, but you kicked this person off the ballot. The law doesn't say that if you have knowledge that somebody's ineligible, you can't kick them off the ballot. It just says you don't have to affirmatively check to see whether someone's eligible. Do you see?
I do.
So it's apples and oranges. If I know you're born in another country, I don't have to vet you. I just know you are. Here's another thing, and, you know, I might as well get this one out too. I wasn't concentrating on how to draft laws to fix this ballot eligibility issue, because I was trying to get people to redress this horrible situation in the 2008 election. I will not drop it. The election was fraudulent, and I can't stand it. All right? But if I had to draft eligibility laws, and people are contacting me all the time, well, I've talked to my legislature, you know something, your laws already say that the Secretary of State or whoever is in charge of the elections gets to make rules and administrative procedures and put whatever is in place in order to carry out the law. So if the authority of the Secretary of State, for example, is to govern the practice of elections, then she can just draft a rule that says, and all candidates, in order to establish eligibility, have to do such and such, if the law in that state says that you have to be eligible to be on the ballot. You don't need to draft new laws or whatever. It's a rule, you see? It's a procedure. It's simple as that.
Now, let me just ask you one question again here, because I know if I have it, there are others. Again, there is no statute of limitations on these claims. I mean, people can't say, get over it, the election's over, move on.
They can say that, and the response is, if this was a fraudulent election, what is to stop it from happening again? It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and basically its application is right now, before 2012, to get anyone on the ballot. People have to be very alert on that. Now,
You could do it right now.
Correct.
The
you could actually
Party
start that.
Republican could do it right now. They could go into court and ask for an injunction against Boyd Ritchie putting the name of Barack Obama on the ballot. They could do it right now. I'll tell you something else. You know what the chair, there's a new chair of the Republican Party in Texas, Kathy Adams. Unbelievable. Very, very conservative. Oh, people would be so happy, people who want conservative. Very conservative. She was recommended to be an RNC committee woman by Phyllis Schlafly of the Heritage, of the Eagle Foundation. Eagle Forum, rather. Very conservative, Phyllis Schlafly. Well, why hasn't Ms. Adams addressed this issue? Why hasn't the RNC addressed this issue? You know what they were engaged in the summer of 2009, just before Kathy Adams became the chair of the RPT, Neil Cavuto interviewed them on Fox. You know what they were arguing about? Kathy Adams, on behalf of the conservative members of the RNC, was trying to get the executive committee to vote on a resolution that they're going to rename the Democratic Party the Democrat Socialist Party.
Whoa.
That's what they were concerned with, the Democrat Socialist Party. And Michael Steele didn't want to do it, and Kathy Adams wanted to do it, and her conservative supporters wanted to do it. And Neil Cavuto, you could see him trying to hold back the laughter, and he says to Ms. Adams, aren't there more important issues that need addressing, more important problems that need fixing? Yeah, like how about preserving the integrity of the election ballot in the state of Texas?
Yeah, and also, I mean, everyone knows the Democrats are socialists now anyway, so why bother?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let me just give you perspective. There's 14 minutes left. I just have a couple of questions. Who's ever on the phone, if you want to ask a question, please press 1. And there are no questions yet in the chat, so... tell me if I can ask my question or just wait till the end, and because I think you should
ask your question by all means.
Well, it's speculation, and I know you don't really like to do this, but I'm, you know, you could say yes or no or I decline. But my feeling about the Republicans' failure to deal with this issue, even with the quote unquote really simple path that this election fraud angle provides us. It's simple, straightforward. It's right there. Is about two things. One, is their shame, you know, realizing that they have violated their oath of office and might get caught. And the second thing is could they be thinking of running a ineligible candidate sometime in the future, like Bobby Jindal or somebody else? And I realize as I ask those questions, that's speculation. I'd actually rather hear more from you on your story in the remaining few minutes we have. But that's what I had, 13 minutes.
Okay, let me address this, because, and you're right.
We do have one question coming in, so go ahead first, and then
Hold that question. Let me answer your question.
Okay.
The reason that I want the story about the RPT out there is not because, as you say, I want to get into their heads, because I don't. It's because I want the public to understand these things. My primary goal is to educate. I figure if I didn't know something, somebody else didn't know it either. If I had been complacent before the summer of 2008, then there were a lot of other people who were more complacent than me. And if I understand something that's very complex, I assume a lot of other people don't understand that yet, except for the people who did understand it and stole our power. So I want to learn and then pass on what I learned in terms that will be understandable to lay people. I don't always accomplish that, and so people can ask me questions on the blog. But I'm telling you about the Republican Party because I'm sick and tired of hearing name-calling on the Democratic side only, Democrats and things like that. The Republicans are doing the same thing. And the Attorney General of Texas happens to be Republican, but that shouldn't matter. I have been using this expression, country before club. He's the attorney general. It's a constitutional office in Texas. His job is to be the chief law enforcement official of the state.
Gee, I sure like that statement, country before club. Are you ready to take a question?
I am.
Okay. Hang on.
Okay.
Let's see. Caller's last four numbers, 7576. Please tell us who you are and if you have a question for JBJD.
Yes, I do. I have a quick question. You lost me a little bit on mandamus, but wouldn't it be funny if Tom DeLay would bring the action against the... can that happen? I mean, can we contact Tom DeLay and say, hey, we've got a case for you?
Hmm? Yes, it couldn't, because the standing goes to the candidate who would be running in the election.
Well, then that would be John McCain.
Well, now, John McCain could have, absolutely. Anyone else whose name was on the primary ballot in Texas in the 2008 Republican presidential preference primary, anyone could have filed that case, because the case was in 2006. So in 2008, if you thought that Barack Obama was not eligible to be on the ballot in Texas, you could have brought that case.
So, again, now what are the options? It has to go to court, or you're saying a group can get together and petition the Secretary of State to that's what I'm saying. I got lost on exactly
what we can
do right now.
When I'm talking about that lawsuit, that's totally separate from the citizens' complaints of election fraud, which go to the Attorney General. The citizens are just reporting a crime to their Attorney General. That's all those citizens' complaints are. When I talked about the case, the TDP versus the RPT, that case is a legal case that the Republican Party or candidates running under the banner of the Republican Party could bring. That is a court case. I'm not asking civilians to do that. I'm saying you can either harass the Attorney General or petition the Attorney General, rightfully as citizens, to respond to your citizen complaints, or you can go to the Republican Party and say, why are you sitting around letting this happen?
Well, I think this is actually going, and I think the Democratic Party knows this, it's going to actually come around, and it's going to rear its ugly head, because the Republican electorate is different than the Democrats, because they hold their candidates responsible.
Excuse me, I disagree with what you're saying, and that's the whole point of bringing up that the Republican Party's been sitting on their hands, too. So they're no more anxious to enforce or preserve the integrity of your state ballot in Texas or any other state than the Democrats are. As far as I'm concerned, they're absolutely equal.
No, I'm saying the Republican people registered as Republicans hold their candidates to a high standard, and they will there could be consequences if it gets out to the extent that they feel the Republican Party is not living up to this. Their standard.
I hear what you're saying. Well, I hope so.
You know what I'm saying?
I hope so.
Yeah, I do. I want to echo that caller because it's. I find people are waking up, and right now this kind of information makes much more sense to people right now, and I think the extent of fraud and the silence from the Republican Party leaders, not the people, is astounding. So thank you, caller, for raising that. And I want to just ask, just because I'm the time master here, we have 6 minutes left, and caller, do you have another question, or...
No, it is frustrating. I saw what was going through with Ohio and how many people wrote, and there were Freedom of Information Acts there. There was nothing that was to prevent that the Department of Health from releasing anything to back up their statements, and yet no lawyer came forward there to file a case, and that was surprising to me also.
Mm.
And I think that's why people are sitting here thinking, all right, what is it that we can do to just get this over and done with? You know, I don't think it's because people don't want to do anything. It's that
they don't know what to do.
Can't figure out what it is that's actually going to stick.
Yes, but let me say something. We have identified, we meaning my readers and I, asked them to go to their laws. I could have looked up the laws in 50 states. I'm nobody's savior. If citizens don't empower themselves, anyone's going to walk all over them. I've asked citizens to look up the laws in their states, look up the election laws, know what it's like to pick up the phone and call your Secretary of State, those kinds of things. So citizens identified six states that have these ballot eligibility laws. There's a seventh state that somebody identified. He doesn't live in that state, but he has a friend there, so he identified that state, and it's Alabama. I can't find an Alabaman to work with me on this complaint. And before I file a complaint, as I've mentioned before, I always have a person from that state get to the Secretary of State and say, I want all of the information that was submitted to you. Now, the certifications for Alabama were sent to me by this person who doesn't live in Alabama. I want the person in Alabama to contact me. I want that person to request the documents. All right? So then I can say that we actually asked for, you know, the complaints have to be absolutely accurate and honest. So somebody from that state has to ask for the documents.
I'm going to bring another caller in, 972. Just unmuting you now. Please introduce yourself, and if you have a question, we have 4 minutes. Go ahead, 972, you're on the air.
Well, this is Ed Sunderland, if this is the 972 number that you got.
Oh, hi, Ed, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I've had a little bout of pneumonia here, and my computer I picked up a virus on it, so it had to be shut down for quite a while.
A sympathy illness.
Yeah. Well, listen, bottom line, the biggest difficulty I think that we've had to overcome here is there isn't a politician or a state representative that wants to get involved. They don't have the brass to do it. You know, I've been on the phone. I've talked with the Secretary of State's office, with the Attorney General's office, and both of them pointed at each other with dueling pistols and don't do a damn thing.
Yeah.
And same thing with my local state representative. I've been trying to get something going with him. I've tried to meet with him twice. I'm going to try again. Here in possibly this next weekend or this coming weekend, and see if I can get something rolling in that direction. But the bottom line, they're just spineless, they're gutless, they don't want to talk to you about it. They want to pass it off onto somebody else or come up with some lame excuses why they don't want to pursue it.
I want to say something.
Yes.
We know so much more about some of these facts than so many of these guys. So that's one thing. We know more facts, and they know the public perception, birthers or 911 or whatever it is. But the other thing is, and this is really critical, a politician, even a well-intentioned one, I believe, is not going to risk his or her whole career on the backs of only 100 complaints.
Well, you know, I asked the Attorney General and I asked the Secretary of State, how many signatures do you want on a petition? How many is it going to take? What is the magic number? Do you have a formula that you would use in order to launch a complaint? Is it 25,000, 50,000? What do you want? And I still couldn't get a drag and answer out of those guys.
Because legally, the discretion is the Attorney General's. But that's the law. You can't compel an investigation. It's at the discretion of, and that's the way it is in every state. And I can't go into it now, but that's actually a good thing. But if you have 1,000 people or 500 people or talk to your organizations and get everybody to sit on the steps of the state house and call the press before you show up and say, these are the complaints, and this is what's happened, and blah, 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 and if the person wants to run for office again or wants to even live in that neighborhood, the person's going to have to respond. It has to be more expensive for the person to ignore you than to comply with you and make the ignoring you more expensive.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have got 1 minute left. I'm going to leave one of you with the last word.
Who?
JBJD, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, I know this is so hard, and the longer it goes, and the more people fight the bad fights, the harder it is for those of us who know what we're doing to get our points across. It's going to take numbers. That's the only way this is going to work, either filing the complaints Or I would highly recommend showing up in person. Bring 6 people, then bring 10 people, then bring 25 people, and eventually the press will pick it up. Eventually something will happen, but you have to hit that critical mass.
Gotcha.
Thank you so much, JBJD, all the guests. Thank you so much for being here and for calling JBJD. I'm going to have you on again. Will you join us?
I sure will. I hope we have better news next time.
Well, I think it's getting out, and I want to thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Please join us tomorrow night for
Walls. Hey, everybody. Good night.
In our minds. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Night.
Okay. Bye-bye. Just
Thank you.